Before we get started with this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Adore.fm, and ChiroRadio.com, and wherever else podcasts are available. Let's get started with the show. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 302 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom, indeed. We've got a great show for you this week. Let's see. Special guest, the horror master himself, John Carpenter, going to be joining us a little bit later in the show. And then coming up here real quick is my friend, your friend, everybody's friend, Chris Cunningham of the band Ravenna Woods, who will be playing at this year's Timber Festival. That's coming up on July 14th through the 16th. There in beautiful Carnation, Washington. This is a festival that I usually MC, but they fired me, and it's so weird because the guy who runs the thing is like one of my best friends. I didn't get fired. I usually do a great job. They love having me there. It's just with all the stuff going on, I can't make it this year. I just can't make it, but you should go to timbermusicfest.com, get yourself some tickets to this amazing festival. It's going to be awesome. Let's take a look at some of the artists that are going to be there, besides Ravenna Woods, who's going to be joining me here in just a second. Telekinesis, Langhorne Slim and the Law, Deep Sea Diver, Jesse Sykes and the Sweet Hereafter, Chastity Belt, the Moondoggies, La Molo, Ravenna Woods, playing with, Seattle, Tycho. Let's bring Chris on right now because, maybe he can explain this a little bit. Seattle Tycho. Tycho is what?
Tycho, well, let's see here. It's Seattle Kokon Tycho is the group we're playing with. So the way that most people in, I guess, America would understand Tycho is
the big drums.
Yeah, it's Japanese. It's traditional Japanese drums. And the way we think about it is an ensemble, like a drum corps. I was just actually having a discussion with one of the senior members of the drum corps, Lika Siegel, who's just awesome. And I did a kind of a short interview with her for a promo video, and she was explaining to me that Taiko actually, you know, just in Japanese just means drum. So there, traditional Taiko drumming was not like ensemble drumming, not drum corps, just like a single kind of, single drum, and they'd use it for multiple cultural purposes, like all this cool stuff, like setting the boundaries in villages from like where you can like hear the drum play and all this interesting, cool stuff like that. But it moved over to the States. I believe in the last like 30 or 40, maybe 40 years as like an ensemble thing. This one guy on the West Coast kind of changed it into like a drum corps type thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's what I guess kind of our, you know, people in the States would view it as.
Right, right. Well, when Kevin told me that that this was going to be happening, I was like, this couldn't be like more of a perfect fit. Because you guys, Ravenna Woods, who we've played many times, and you yourself have been on this show a couple times now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, your sound is very percussive. You play a very strange and intriguing guitar style.
Thank you.
That's very percussive in and of itself.
Sure.
And and playing with this huge drum corps, especially
it makes sense.
It just totally makes sense. It totally makes sense. Yeah. Like when you said it to me, it was like, oh yeah. Like it wasn't even like this big revelation, like, oh my God. It was like, yes, that's perfect.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly how we felt about it. And even from just the first rehearsal with, you know, with the way we have Matt's drum set up, as you know, it's this unconventional setup that, mm-hmm. that is not your typical like rock drummer setup. And it's very, it's this kind of these intense, kind of tight pattern drumming, almost like, you know, like some of it, like marching band style, like, it's just, yeah, the first rehearsal we had with them, we realized right off the bat, like, okay, this is going to go really well. I mean, it's, yeah, it just works perfect with what we do. Especially having, you know, it be very tom based,
right,
and having, you know, the snare be kind of more of an accent, to the kit. It's kind of perfect.
And how have the rehearsals been going?
They've been going really well.
Yeah.
We're playing.
This must be taking, like, is this one of those things that is like you get yourself into it and then you're just like, oh shit.
a little bit. Like the idea is like, oh, I mean, of course, like how could you not take it? And then you're like, okay, let's start doing the, like, you know, let's start like scheduling their,
it takes
their,
a lot like, oh, of God. Work.
Yeah. This might not work well. No. Yeah, absolutely. I get that fear about just about everything I agree to in my life. Right out of the gate, I'm like, yes, I will do that. And then like a week before, I'm like, oh crap.
See, me, it's more like 2 hours in. 2 hours in, and then I'm like, boy, am I regretting my decision.
Yeah, I mean, with
to
this,
go along with this.
Right, yeah, I do that too, for sure. No, it's one of those things where, you know, it's interesting too, because, you know, before we started talking, when we were chatting before the show, I mentioned, we were talking about rehearsal, and it's interesting because, you know, we come from way different camps, obviously, like they're, you know, a taiko drum corps, and we're like, I don't know, percussive indie, dark indie rock band or whatever.
Yeah.
So we kind of just, I think very early on the rehearsals, we're like, we're not going to stress about anything being like perfect. Like, this is what it is. It's fun as hell, and it's going to be like thunderous and awesome, you know. So don't sweat the small stuff. Let's just, yeah.
I am so bummed that I have to miss this.
Ah, yeah. Seriously.
You know,
we can play in here.
Can we do a live session here in the backyard? Can we even fit one of the drums through the door?
Yeah, totally. We could. I think with all the drums in here, we'd be like smashed up against the wall.
But, yeah. And the TV would probably fall off of it.
Yeah,
of its stand, and and then you guys would owe me money.
I mean, we could just consider that payment for that performance.
Okay. So what else has been going on, man? You've got a ton of stuff going on right now, because now you are basically like a photographer and filmmaker for Ravenna Woods.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
You guys are working on, you've got a new EP that's coming out,
and then
a full length that's coming out after that.
Yes. Yeah.
And a new video that's coming out that we should talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got a lot of stuff on your plate.
Yeah, we decided we had talked a lot years ago about, you know, we love music videos so much.
Yeah.
All of us are just,
well, that last one that you guys released, what was with at the taxidermy place.
Oh yeah, Border Animals.
I had you and Brantley on the
show,
and
we were
talking about that. It just sounded like the weirdest thing, because weren't you guys like outside of this video is great. You gotta go and check it out if you haven't already. It's a lot of weird kind of like
subtle
movements that are happening in the dead animals. And then, but in the making of this, you were at this actual like taxidermy shop, and you step outside and it just smells like death, because there's just piles of like entrails. Yeah.
No,
and
Brantley,
I came
out and Brantley was just, I just saw Brantley's back and he was just motionless. And I like went up to him to see if he was okay. And, and I tapped him on the shoulder and he just lifted a finger and pointed. And I looked at what he pointed at, and it was this area where they basically like pressure washed the flesh off of the bones of animals. So it was just this this pit of flat, you know, and you just seeing Brantley slowly raise a finger, not say a word, and just let me take it in. You know, it's like, oh God, this is where that's where the smell is coming from.
What an interesting story.
And the guys that ran that place, oh man. Yeah.
What
it
a
was
trip.
Quite interesting. Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I love that story. So what's with the new video? Let's save that because you're gonna stick around and listen to this interview that I did with John Carpenter.
Oh yeah.
Because you're a huge horror movie fan as
Absolutely. I watched a John Carpenter film last night just to prepare.
Okay, well let's just hold on to that for a second, okay?
Sure. Holding on tight.
As you can see, I've done a lot of preparation. I've got a lot of notes.
There's a table in front of Aaron, for those of you who aren't with us, which is everyone. And there's a table that's just packed, stacked full of notes and photographs and just CDs and cassette tapes even.
Yeah, you're probably wondering how I got that tape of you on the toilet.
Yeah, I did deliver to you personally, but we'll just, for the sake of this,
Chris is lying through his teeth. I have nothing out here. And I was like, Chris was nice enough just to answer an email from me last night saying, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? You want to come over and just talk about John Carpenter with me? And he was like, yes. Yeah. So, not a lot of preparation went into this, but I do want to talk about like the new music that's coming out for you guys. You've told me, and we're going to, we'll listen to some stuff a little bit later in the show, but it's kind of a departure for you guys.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's going on here?
So basically, I think, you know, with every record, the first two records, Demons and Lakes, that was our first full length, and then the next EP, Valley of the Headless Men. Yeah. We were doing things really stripped down. And we started the band with Matt playing like two floor toms, essentially, and then just me on acoustic and Brantley on xylophone. And we kind of branched off a little bit for Valley of the Headless Men, just added, you know, a little bit of keys, mandolin.
Yeah, that awesome, like, little toy piano.
Toy piano. And then added a little bit more to Matt's setup. And then for our next full-length, The Jackals, we brought in, like, a piano player, Sam Miller. And it just kind of expanded a little bit more. And then what happened between then and now is that Nick Danielson joined the band,
who went to college with.
Right. Yeah. That's so cool. And he was in a local band, The Kindness Kinds,
right.
Years back, and also plays with the Seattle Rock Orchestra. And he's an amazing, multi-instrumentalist and composer. And, him and I became friends through the Rock Orchestra, performing with the Rock Orchestra.
Yeah.
And, after Sam Miller moved to New York, he ended up stepping in with Ravenna, and that was just when we had basically halfway, you know, into playing The Jackals, that record out live. And then he and I realized really quickly that we had an affinity for kind of like really like distorted, almost like Nine Inch Nails, like industrial, dark, melodic, kind of really gritty, electronic kind of stuff.
Sure.
And so we started doing this project, writing together, and we just called this project Night Flights, and we recorded like an EP's worth of material. And we started kind of playing out with it, and then that's when Ravenna started writing the next record. And we basically took that kind of style that we were experimenting around with, Night Flights, and just injected it into Ravenna, and it just, the combination was like perfect.
Yeah.
Basically. So in answer to in a really long winded answer to your question, you still with me? It's way, you know, it's Nick playing a lot of, like synth, Nord stuff, sampled stuff, Prophet.
Yeah, yeah. Cause you guys, I mean, Ravenna Woods has been a band for quite some time now.
Yeah.
How many years have you guys been together?
Six and a half.
I was going to say 10, but you're getting there.
Yeah.
So when you add like a new element to something like that, that is like in your space is very well polished. You guys know each other, you know each other's movements, you know each other where somebody's going to go, you know, even if you're just, you know, playing, just jamming, right? Like, and you add a new element to that. Is that kind of like a to throw a wrench into the into things at all?
No, the exact opposite. It just makes things like explode. You know, with more, we're really good. I mean, we're all of us are all the musicians in the band are just really, really like they think quick on their feet, and experimentation is like the biggest. Basically, every time we rehearse, we write a new song. You know, whether or not that goes anywhere, but like we just are constantly so. Throwing something new in the mix just means that we're going to write faster and come up with more ideas.
It's yeah.
And that's what happened. And it really felt like this time around, like there was just some kind of missing agreement, like ingredient, like with this EP and this record that are coming out. It just, we feel so much like, okay, this is like the band, like this like the really complete version of Ravenna Woods, you know, like, yeah. Which is awesome.
Well, let's listen to some Ravenna Woods here. We'll take our first musical break, and then we'll be back with more from Chris Cunningham from Ravenna Woods. Once again, playing the Timber Outdoor Music Festival with a Taiko band. What do I say?
Taiko Drum Corps?
Taiko Drum Corps. Okay.
Yeah.
And they're called the Seattle...
Kokon Taiko.
Kokon. Yeah. Kokon Taiko. And, God, get your tickets to this. July... When are you guys playing? July 16th?
We're playing on the Saturday, so the 15th.
Oh, the 15th.
Is that right? 14th through the 16th?
Yeah, it's 14th through the 16th. So, you're playing on the 16th.
Is that Saturday?
That is on your website. That is official.
Uh-oh.
That is official.
Is the 16th a Saturday?
I have no idea.
We're playing Saturday at Timberfest, ladies and gentlemen.
16th is the Saturday.
Oh, okay, yeah. Cool.
Oh, man.
I know stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I should have had some notes. July 14th through the 16th, Timber Outdoor Music Festival. Let's see. In beautiful Carnation, Washington, go to timbermusicfest.com and get your tickets now because they are going fast. Telekinesis is going to be there. Deep Sea Diver, Jesse Sykes and the Sweet Hereafter, Chastity Belt, Jason Webley, the Moondoggies, Langhorn Slim and the Law. I mean, God dang, man. Oh, and the Moondoggies and the Meldives are doing a Creedence Clearwater Revival tribute, which should be pretty awesome as well.
We played with Fogarty once. I think we talked about
shut
this.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Did we talk about this?
I don't remember
this.
Yeah. We opened for Fogarty at the San Michele Winery.
Did you
once.
Meet him?
He drove past us in a white Lexus on the way to the stage.
On the way to the stage?
And we had to sign a contract saying we wouldn't cover any Creedence songs.
Oh, I've heard about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
it was pretty
hilarious.
Funny. It was
pretty
that's
funny. Hilarious.
And the backstage, like his green room is like this this mansion. Basically, yeah, like this historical, beautiful house. And we're like, oh my God, this is, we're sharing a group. And then we get in there and they like quickly
shuffle you off to
a broom closet, and there's like a bowl in the middle of this teeny room with like stale chips.
That's what I was gonna say. Stale Cheetos.
I'm not kidding.
Oh my God, that is the worst. Oh, that's so funny though.
Got paid like $100.
It's like give
bucks.
The opening band those old Cheetos that Terry was eating on the bus. Yeah. Oh my God. All right, this is Ravenna Woods. We'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us.
Give it more, but it will never be enough because it wants you.
some odd interviews that I've done, and I still do like the weirdest shit. Like people will come in, like professional fucking producers will come in here, and they're like, "Why are you using that and that? What are you doing? Why do you have two programs? Why you do that?" I was like, I don't know. That's just how I learned, because I had to teach myself how to use this equipment, and it's all backwards, man. It's all backwards.
Just shut up and talk.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So let's talk a little bit about John Carpenter, dude, because you, and we've talked about this kind of stuff before, but you are a horror movie fan, as am
Absolutely,
I.
Absolutely, yeah.
You're probably more of a John Carpenter fan than I am.
Well, I don't know. How do we measure something?
Well,
I'm just
a fan, dude. Like I've watched his movies, although I've never seen Wishmaster.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I don't know if I was even aware that was John Carpenter.
I think it is, isn't it? Or is that Wes Craven?
It might be Wes Craven.
Should we look that up?
We should. Yeah. I'm trying to think. So one movie that I haven't seen from him is his like college, his film that he did in college, Dark Star. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. And I really, really want to.
I'm curious. I'm really curious. It's like a cult classic.
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't it supposed to be kind of like half like Wishmaster was Wes Craven. It was produced by Wes Craven.
There you go.
I was totally wrong on that.
Here's an interesting little factoid about Dark Star.
It was supposed to be funny too, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's considered like a black comedy.
Basically. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the interesting thing about this is one of his partners, you know, who he's in film school with, who made that movie. There's an alien running around on the ship that was supposed to be comic relief. It was basically like this, like beach ball looking cheesy thing, and that was the inspiration for the first Alien movie. The guy who he worked on with that movie took that idea of an alien running around loose on a ship and was like, okay, I'm gonna actually like take that idea.
I don't want to get too off topic here, but I just bought the Alien quadrilogy
nice
on Blu-ray
nice,
and man, I powered through like all four movies like in the last like week. I've watched all four of them, and that first Alien movie is so great. I mean, it's like they have horror down. Like and I mean, still to this day, it's terrifying. It's a terrifying
movie.
I'm
not sure if I'm more afraid of the alien or the android in that movie, because he scares the hell out of me.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah. What's that guy's name? What's the actor's name on that?
I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Because he was great.
He was great. Phenomenal.
But then you can see, like, you see the transition. You watch Aliens, right? The second one.
Which is also,
which is still really
more of
good.
An action flick.
Less, yeah, but it's more of an action. Yeah. But that one was, you can tell that, like, if you've watched, like, Avatar at all recently.
No.
James Cameron.
Right, yeah.
And you watch Aliens, you go back and you watch Aliens.
I do remember James there's Cameron, similarity. I mean,
many similarities. Uh-huh. Down to like the super cliched, like Marine
Space
Corps,
Marine.
Space Marine
speak.
All the like classic tropes that he uses and stuff.
Sure.
And just the nonsense that happens. Like just absolute nonsense. Like it made me realize that James Cameron is really just a real piece of shit.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
Just like going back and watching that. I'll let you borrow it. All right. You need to pick it apart, because it's just so, it's still a great movie. And I think it's more for nostalgic reason that I think it's a great movie than it is actually a great movie. Because if you watch it now, Aliens number two, James Cameron is just,
Don't tell me this. I love that movie. It's so good.
This
time around, it just didn't have the impact.
Well, it didn't really. I mean, it had the impact still, but it was like the dialogue is so bad.
Mm, mm.
So bad.
Well, you know, Space Marines are kind of vulgar creatures. You can't
it's
expect them
the
to be reciting
though.
Shakespeare
it's
and reading, you know, Sartre. You know, it's
not the vulgarity. It's just how they interact. It's like nobody fucking says that.
Sartre. I always say Sartre. Sorry. No, I mean, how? Maybe 150 years from now, they will be talking like that. Maybe we'll have a little bit of a de-evolution of our, you know.
We'll see. We'll see.
We'll see. I'll get back to you in about 150 years.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Back to John Carpenter. So, yes. So what did you watch last night?
I watched a kind of obscure one that I feel like a lot of my friends who are Carpenter fans haven't seen, which is Prince of Darkness.
Ooh. Have you seen that? Yeah.
Yes.
It's been a long time.
Oh my God. That movie has a specific kind of terror in it. And it really all boils down to this one scene that I paused while it was projected on my wall last night at about 2 a.m. and just like shuddered. And it's this scene where, you know, this portal is basically opened up through this giant mirror in a room.
Right.
And this like possessed... this human form that's possessed by this evil demonic force is beckoning this like bigger force to come through this mirror, and this woman sees it happening, and she tackles the possessed woman through the mirror, and then someone breaks the mirror instantly, and there's just one shot where you see what's happening on the other side of the mirror with like the human woman, and she's falling horizontally, right, like into space, and you just see this giant black arm kind of like, you know, like she's, oh God, it's the most like suffocating. It makes me feel like I'm just have no air when I see that image.
Right.
I'm just like, no. Nah.
Well, you're the one that turned me. You specifically are the person that turned me on to In the Mouth of Madness. Right.
Yeah, one of my favorite movies.
Was that a book adaptation, right? Wasn't it?
I don't believe it was. No. I mean, it has to do with the whole movie is about
books. About a book.
It's about books, and it's basically an homage to H.P. Lovecraft.
Right.
For some reason,
I thought it was a Stephen King adaptation.
No.
Uh-uh. Okay. So totally wrong on that. But when I went back, because you had told me, it was like you were making recommendations to me about like some terrific, like classic horror movies. That one is amazing. It was so well done.
So
even
glad you liked it.
Holds up to now, with the exception of some of the special effects and stuff, of course. But it was just fantastic. John Carpenter had a great way of not only integrating like horrific scenes, which sometimes could be gory, but sometimes could just be super, super suspenseful. But he had a great way of like mixing in the music with that kind of stuff, which we're going to be talking about here in just a moment. Because he did a lot of his own music for all of his movies, which is super impressive. And I think with Dark Star, he actually started out doing the music because they had no money.
Right.
You know,
that's a pretty good reason.
Yeah. And so what he's doing right now is he is on tour. He's got this album out called Lost Themes 2. And yes, I know what you're asking yourself. There is a Lost Themes 1 as well. He is on tour. He was here in Seattle on June 14th. Let's see. Where is he at next? Today he's at Carnegie of Homestead Music Hall in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. But it's too late for that. July 12th, he's going to be at the Lincoln Theater in Washington, D.C. The Cathedral Theater in Detroit, Michigan on July 15th, July 16th at Thalia Hall in Chicago, Illinois, and on and on. You can go to theofficialjohncarpenter.com to find out more about the tour. So what did, like, do you ever remember like watching his movies and just like admiring the music and how it kind of integrated with the scenery and stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting. It's atypical, I feel like, of movies in general, like his soundtracks. And there's an element of, I mean, it's interesting because we were talking a little bit before the show started about how you were listening to this new record, and you're saying, oh yeah, it kind of plays like a record would play rather than what you'd think like theme music might sound like. And I remember, first seeing his movies and for instance, in The Mouth of Madness, it has kind of like a rock type feel to it. And it moves it, I guess it, what I remember from first hearing it is it gives it a little bit of, more of a kind of an edge and like urgency to it. And like, I don't know it. Yeah. There's, it just, it paints a different, kind of ominous, atmosphere, I guess, for lack of a better description, like than typical horror movie stuff. And then like you were saying, there's like classic, things like Halloween.
Well, right? See, and that was, I think that was one of the ones, one of the first ones that really kind of, you know, jettisoned his career.
Right.
Right. I mean,
and it's like one of the most simple soundtracks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's and like Jaws style, it's, like it's, something.
Exactly.
And those are the ones that will always, I can think, you know, it's clear as day in my head right
well,
now.
Well, and he's got some very interesting things to say about that too. So I'm glad that
can't
you're going
to
stick
hear.
Around and actually listen to this.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear.
I mean, the Halloween theme, everybody knows it. It
sure,
became part of the lexicon of our culture. And if you, even if you're not into horror movies or something, you hear that sound, you know that it's from a horror movie. You may not know it's from a John Carpenter movie.
Yes.
You know.
Definitely not a rom-com.
It's not a rom-com. And there's a guy in a white mask with some crazy hair that might be coming to get you, right?
Although, maybe we should try producing a rom-com that uses like iconic horror movie soundtracks just to see what kind of like, what the crowd does, you know?
That would just be, I think, the best matchup ever. Yeah, yeah. But to explain a little bit more, I failed to do this, but the Lost Themes 2 album is basically, as far as I know, it's a bunch of theme music that he didn't really ever use. He's playing, he's touring the country, touring the world, actually, playing stadiums and these huge theaters, like getting up on stage and playing music with his, like, his kids are in the band, like
That's
playing
awesome.
Music with him.
That's so cool.
And he's just up there on the synthesizer, man, just going for it.
So you,
it's so cool.
So you said unused. Does that mean that he writes before the movies even are?
I don't know.
Or maybe he wrote them to a movie and it just never got used in the production.
I think that
that's
it's
probably,
more of the latter.
Yeah.
And some of it I think is just music that he's just writing.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
Not for
that's
movies
what I thought.
All.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And it does have a very kind of a rock bent to it. And it's totally listenable as an album. Like you and I listened to a little bit of it mm-hmm. before we started recording, and it doesn't really come across as like a soundtrack, right? Like a typical soundtrack that you would like hear in a movie.
Yeah,
it's
I mean,
more
I
of
think
a,
I think we feel. I mean, I
feel to it.
I definitely feel that. I mean, it could just be my connection to his movies.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, when I put the headphones on,
he has a style.
Yeah. And I immediately was like you said, like Dark Corridor, like,
right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like it's just, so to me, it's hard to separate.
I know.
But yeah.
I think what we'll do then here is we're going to play one of the songs from Lost Themes 2. And we'll go with that one that we were talking about. It's like just sounds like you're going down a dark corridor. This one is called Distant Dream. And we'll be right back with our conversation with Mr. John Carpenter, the horror master himself. Go to theofficialjohncarpenter.com and check out this album. You can buy it there. And check out where he's going to be on tour around the world. A lot of our listeners are in a lot of these places, so check it out. Okay, this is Distant Dream by John Carpenter. And we be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Oh, shit. John Carpenter. I'm super nervous just to listen back to this, too, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, I was very... Would you be nervous talking to John Carpenter?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely I would.
Yeah, you would, because you're a normal person. Yeah, I was very nervous.
Yeah.
I was very nervous. Okay, let's check this out. Let's check this out.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, are you ready?
We're going to go. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. I imagine you're an old hat at this by now.
At radio interviews? No, I'm not at all.
No?
No.
Really?
I don't like radio interviews, but let's do it.
Well,
let's do this thing.
Well, shit, man. I'm sorry.
Let's go.
You're coming to Seattle here to play the Paramount. You're in support of this new album called Lost Themes 2. And as I understand it, this is music that you have made for your movies in the past, correct?
No, I'm coming for a career retrospective. So I'm going to be at the theater to play. 70% of the show is my old theme. Everything from Halloween to Escape from New York, all the way back. And then 20 to 25% from the new album is Lost Themes 1 and Lost Themes 2.
Oh, gotcha. So when did I know that your dad, you grew up in a musical household. Your father was a music professor, correct?
I did.
So I'm guessing that music was a large part of your childhood then, huh?
It was. It was not necessarily my first love, but it was my father imbued me with music. He played it all the time. He tried to get me to play the violin.
Uh-huh.
Only problem with that was I had no talent, but otherwise it was fine.
Yeah.
I grew up, of course, loving movies and noticing the soundtracks to movies that, throughout the 50s and 60s. So music was everywhere. And then I was a big rock and roll fan. I was a big metal fan of Rolling Stones. Yeah.
Yeah, Rolling Stones, that was your go-to as a kid?
Beatles were my deal. They were my voice. My generation.
God.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just working right now. I have two young daughters, and I've been... Basically, we sing Hey Jude every night before they go to bed.
What's their favorite music?
Well, right now, I mean, they're only 5 years old and 2 years old.
So they're finding out things.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm working on that one, John.
Yeah, okay.
I'm working on that one.
Great.
So the Beatles made a big impact on you. Did you ever try to pick up any of the instruments, like guitar, bass, drums?
I did all of them, yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So what was... Did your father still try to get you to go back to like a more classical instrument, or was he appreciative of you picking up anything?
Well, he eventually stopped trying to get me to do the violin, and then he said, "Okay, play something else if you want. You know, keyboards, whatever you want to play." So I moved on.
Yeah, yeah. And did you have friends that you would play music with, too? Did you?
I had a little band.
Yeah.
We used to play in high school. We used to play for fraternity parties. So my prime performance experience was watching drunken frat boys throw up on the floor while we were playing.
Was it all cover tunes, or were you guys playing original stuff?
Cover tunes. Oh, yeah.
Nice. Well, that sounds fun. So your performance career was started at a young age as well, then, huh?
Yeah. But see, I went to film school. I left the small town in Kentucky.
Right.
And in film school, look, you know, a student filmmaker, you don't have any money to make movies.
Sure.
So what I would do is do my own music. Then I began to do music for my friend's film. And I would do them on keyboards or guitar, some real simple stuff.
Yeah.
And I moved to synthesizer because I could do several tracks and sound big.
Yeah.
And so as I moved into low-budget filmmaking, I kind of took that with me and did my own scores.
Now I remember reading, like, when your first major film, Dark Star, came out in 1974, or I don't know if that's when it came out, but you guys were working on it, and you were doing or composing the music for that as well. Was that more out of necessity, or was it more because you're just kind of a hands-on person and like to be involved with anything or everything in the film?
A little both, but yeah, mainly necessity, just because we had no money.
Sure.
We had no money. For a composer, I would love to have had a big orchestral score, but we didn't have the money for it. Was it possible?
Right, right. But you kept that up throughout your film career as well. I mean,
I did, and then finally it became part of the signature of directing signature of what I would do on a movie. So I think it was really hard work. You know, in the beginning it was necessity, and it was after the movie was shot. Always after the movie was shot, and most of the time it was improvised.
Yeah.
Depending on what the scenes needed, or what the tone, what the signature of the sequence was.
Yeah.
And then in a horror film, see, you have to also use silence. So you don't just want to use music all the time. You want to use silence. And taking music out is really important.
Sure, sure.
But I think the Assault and Precinct 13 and Halloween were probably my two early, most famous scores.
Well, yeah, and I will say, I mean, the Halloween score has become part of the culture.
Yeah,
That's a pretty amazing thing. I would think.
It's just one of those little pieces of repetitious pieces of music that gets in your head and kind of grinds away in there.
Well, and it also because whenever I hear it, I'm a big horror movie fan as well. And whenever I hear that piece of music that always, comes on when Michael Myers is somewhere near, right?
Uh-huh.
The hair stands up on the back of your neck.
Yeah. Well, that's designed that way.
Well, sure. I mean, it's very, very effective. What was the feeling when you wrote that?
That was something I had done since I was a teenager, which my father taught me 5/4 time.
Okay.
On the bongos, and that was Halloween. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. So that's all it was.
Right.
So I just sat down on the keyboard and rocked the octave, playing 5/4 times. Just an experiment, and that's what I came up with.
Oh, my gosh. That's so cool. It's really, really stood the test of time, Just something so easy. It's usually some of the most simple things are the things that stick with you throughout your life.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. So when you said that it was more necessity. Creating music for your films, and as time went on, that just moved into more of your signature of directing your films. But I mean, did you ever want to when you were becoming more successful and the budgets of your movies were getting bigger, did you ever have the thought of, maybe I should just give this to somebody else? Or?
Oh, sure. And yeah. I did. Uh-huh. Ennio Morricone scored The Thing. Jack Nietzsche scored Starman. Shirley Walker and I co-composed on Escape from L.A. So I've used other composers and loved it. Loved it.
Yeah.
Loved the result.
Is it something too that when you are making a scene or putting together a scene, are you hearing something as well? I mean,
no, that's all storytelling. That's not
okay.
That's just basic directing.
Sure.
But the music, for me, the music comes later.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So when did when you got back into this, when you started making these albums,
It was by accident. My son and I were improvising stuff, and I got a new music attorney, and she said, "Well, do you have anything new?" So
uh-huh.
I heard the stuff my son and I had been doing, and she got me a record deal on it. So it was pretty basic and easy.
Yeah.
You think of it as a soundtrack sampler. These lost themes is music for the movies in your mind. Because everybody has a movie playing.
Right.
I'm the score for it.
Yeah, yeah. So you're doing this with your son?
Yeah, and my godson, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. So it's a family affair.
It is, totally.
You're almost like the Guthries.
I guess so.
Is it? It must be a pretty enjoyable experience to play music with a family member.
Oh, hell yeah!
Yeah. I don't think I've ever been in that position. I always used to play music, throughout my high school and college careers, but the rest of my family was never into it.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. Everybody here is into it. So,
mm-hmm.
When you try to play with somebody who doesn't really care about the style of music or whatever it is,
yeah,
then you know it's not that much.
Now, having a fairly successful film career, and then going back to music, which in and of itself is a pretty unique trajectory. Did it feel good to get back on stage and start doing tours with a band?
Well, I'm just started again. Yeah, and it's really fun. That's real fun, man. It's great. Is it great at my age? What the hell?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm an old guy now.
So what's it feel like? What's it feel like getting back up on stage and in front of a live audience?
It's great.
Yeah.
It's just so great. Yeah, it's fun. And playing music is fun. I mean,
yeah.
It's great. And I don't have that pressure. I don't have the anxiety of movie making anymore, dealing with studios, producers, time schedules, and all that. I don't have to worry about that crap.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but don't you worry? I mean, is there any worry, for messing something up on stage or anything like that, or does that
I always worry about that.
Yeah,
But
that's a less of a worry for you now.
Yes.
Well, that's wonderful, man. Well, John Carpenter, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me.
Oh, it's been great. Today. Now, what's going on up in Seattle? What's happened?
What's happening in Seattle? Lots of stuff, man. The music scene is popping up here. It's been going wonderful. Yeah, couple of years have been great for music in the city of Seattle.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, yeah. It almost feels like it has the energy that it did back in kind of the 90s again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Except there's a lot more diversity, I would say, in the music now.
Well, I can't wait to get up there and play, man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, have a great show, John, and once again, thank you so much.
And thank you, man. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Holy shit, dude, I talked to John Carpenter.
I am wildly jealous, but also somewhat content that I was, was able to hear it and am here talking to you. So by proxy, I kind of talked to John Carpenter.
Dude, okay, so I hadn't listened back to that like fully yet.
Oh, really?
Not
yeah,
at all. And this
oh,
took
that's
place.
Right,
I mean, this took place like almost 2 months ago now.
God! How did you not?
Well, I don't, because I felt like it didn't go great.
I honestly
and
thought
so
it was, yeah, I liked it. I thought it went really well. I mean, I think that he is a very straight shooter. I mean,
yes.
There's a couple times where he's just kind of like, you know, he did not
laugh at the Arlo Guthrie joke.
No, you know, he must not like, maybe he's not a big fan of folk, and that's fine. But I thought it went really well. I mean, like, you know, that was fascinating. I could listen to another hour of that easily.
Oh yeah, totally. And the funny thing is that like they gave me 10 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Hard line 10 minutes.
God.
But what happened was that they just gave me his home phone number.
Yeah, so what's going to happen?
So it was just like, you know, sometimes when a PR person gives you like a hard time limit, it's like, this is the hard time limit for if the interview sucks. And then if they want to get off the line, that's the time limit,
right?
And then he asked me how everything's going on in Seattle, and I'm still so nervous that I'm talking to John fucking Carpenter that I don't take the reins and go, let's just keep this going. Like,
yeah.
You know?
You're like, it's good.
I'm just like, okay, thanks for chatting with me. Goodbye.
I gotta go.
Oh, my God. I could have held him on the line, dude.
You could have. Yeah.
We could have had a whole conversation about something else.
Wait a second. So you're telling me you have John Carpenter's home phone
number? I have John Carpenter's home phone number.
Because I have a really good idea for a horror movie. You don't think he'd mind?
I think he probably would. Just having a 10-minute conversation with the guy, I think he would mind, actually. Yeah. Yeah. 68 years old, man. And he
and just
is like
rocking it.
Dude, he's like going on tour now. Like, just like, And the one thing that I have to laugh about, and that you and I laughed about when we were listening back to that, is that, you know, he just kind of fell into getting this record deal.
Like, oh, God.
Well, but he's John fucking Carpenter.
He's John Carpenter.
Like,
I mean,
he's
yes.
the horror master. Of course he can get a record deal.
But
the drop
way
of a hat.
The way he says it is just like, yeah, I was jamming with my son, and my music attorney, my new music attorney was like, hey, do you have any new music? And she was like, oh, here's a record deal. Tour the world now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's John Carpenter. I mean,
yeah,
come
yeah,
on.
Of
he's,
course.
He's a legend. Of course he could do
yeah.
anything, and I'm sure get any kind of deal he wanted. He could get like a Nike sponsorship if he really wanted. Slam dunk with John Carpenter.
John Carpenter wouldn't go with Nike. He would totally
it would
go
be like,
Under
it would
Armour.
Be like,
it'd be Under
yeah,
Armour.
Yeah, but it would be like tentacles, like slam dunking a ball, or like, you know, something really weird.
It's
which
super
I would be
would.
So excited.
Oh
about.
My God. Oh man. Yeah, I'm actually kind of proud of that.
You should be, man. I think you held your own really well in it too. Like, I was putting myself in your position as I listened and anticipating how I would have reacted after, you know, to keep the conversation going. And my brain was stalling out like an old truck, basically. I was like, and then
yeah.
So yeah, I think it honestly, yeah.
That's cool. Thank yeah. you, Chris.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, I'm glad you could be here for this, dude, because
me too.
You,
it's an
I
honor.
Know that you are a horror movie fan, a John Carpenter fan. I remember when I posted something on there because the first thing he started out with was like, I hate radio interviews. And I was just like, oh, this is going to go great.
And yeah,
and
the
I
best...
posted that online and you were just like, when are you talking to him? I want to talk to him. I want to meet him.
Yeah.
So this is the best that I could do.
I love that you said that he said, I don't like radio interviews. And he said, oh, I'm sorry. And he goes, let's go. Let's do this.
Oh, God. Well, that one went okay. But
yeah.
Next week, we're going to have one that did not with a very, very famous guitar player. We're going to have a special guest in here to chat about his worst interview that he's ever done. A very special guest. And then we're going to listen to this 2-minute fucking train wreck that happened at the Neptune Theater here in Seattle about a month ago. So next week's going to be great. You going to tune in for that one? I already kind of keyed you in on what happened with all this
oh,
stuff.
Oh, I am. Yeah, I have to hear it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. new Ravenna Woods record coming out. When is there a date or
there is?
Like
we'll
that?
Be we'll be announcing very shortly. We'll be announcing we have an EP coming out shortly.
Okay.
And
that's in October though, right? It's like, isn't it? Did you say the EP is coming out in October?
Yes. Yeah. That is yeah, that is correct.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we have a full length recorded as well, ready to drop in the next year, but we're still getting all the details of that ready to go. And
nice.
Mini music videos and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so that'll be popping
yeah.
off, if you will.
I am super excited, man.
Me too.
I'm excited for you. I'm happy for you. I'm this thing going off on going on at popping off.
Let's just use
at
that.
Timberfest.
Yes,
coming up on Saturday. It's Saturday the 16th of July. There in Carnation, Washington, you're gonna be playing with the Tyco Quartet. Quartet. Why can't I get this right? Why am I so bad at this?
It's okay. Tyco
yeah.
Drum Corps.
Yeah. Jeez. Okay. That
think,
thing.
Think future. Think Marine Corps. Like futuristic Marine
like
Corps.
Like Alien 2. Think
yes.
Alien 2 when you think of a Tyco Drum Quartet. Oh my God, Chris, thank you so much, dude. We're gonna go
Thanks
out today
me.
Playing some more music from John Carpenter. This one's called Angel's Asylum, and I haven't listened to this one yet, so let's hope that it's great. How's that sound?
Sounds fantastic. Let's pop it off.
Let's pop it off. Oh my God, I forgot to do my thing. This whole thing. You can subscribe to Air Raid on iTunes, and if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. Only takes you a couple seconds to give us a 5-star rating, and it really helps us out in the long run. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, and Cairo Radio apps. So download those at your heart's content, or just visit us at air-raid.net to subscribe directly to our RSS feed. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/theairraidpodcast. Our Twitter handle is at airraidnet, or you can email me directly at aaron@air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, folks. Take the pledge to tell somebody about the show. Share it on social media. Tell your friends, your mother, your sister, your brother. We'll even take your cousins. All right? Okay. There we done. Chris, thanks again, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
This is Angel's Asylum off of Lost Themes 2 by John the Horror Master Carpenter. I can't believe I talked to the guy. Oh, my God. And I got his home phone number.
Do you think he'd be interested in directing a music video for a Are you listening, John?
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that one.
I'll just copy his style. It's cool.
There you go. All right, we'll be back next week with an all-new episode of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week.